Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Magic Key upgrade details announced, unfavorable attendance mix at Disneyland, progress towards a new experience in the parks,
new Toontown aerial photos, Halloween is moving in, we talked to guest relations cast member Philander, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Well, hello there. Welcome to our unbirthday party. For your safety, please be sure to stay listening with your hands, arms, feet, and ears inside the podcast. And please, do give Peg and Teresa easier trivia questions. Well, it seems DL Weekly is about to begin. Have a most wonderful time. Perhaps tea time.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of August 17th, 2022. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. We'd like to send a huge shout out to Soshana R., whose birthday is coming up in a couple days, so happy early birthday for that, for becoming an official weekly tier on our Patreon. Our supporters get some pretty fun perks like DL Weekly swag, bonus content, and access to our Discord community and more. If you would like some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to join the community.
Well, feels like it's just around the corner, and we are getting excited for the D23 Expo and, of course, our D23 meetup. We will host a weekly tier meetup at the Disneyland Hotel over at the fireplace near Trader Sam's on Saturday, September 10th from 8 to 10 p.m. If you can stop by for any amount of time, please feel free. We will also be at the Expo the entire weekend, so if you see us around, please stop and say hi.
Well, our friends over at All Enchanting Ears have been busy. They make fun and unique ears, plus ear holders, straw toppers, lithophanes, and more. They're offering a special discount code available to all weekly tiers, even on their new, cool, like, magnetic 3D-printed ear things that they came out with that are super awesome. To get that discount, use code DLWEEKLY10. You get 10% off your entire purchase. To do so, head on over to allenchantingears.com to check them out.
Now let's get to the news. Well, we have been waiting all summer to hear about the renewal options for the Magic Key program and finally got information this week. Each level of the Magic Key will see a price increase from as little as $50 to as much as $200 for the high-end key. The Dream Key, which was the top-end key when the program started and had no blackout dates, has been retired and replaced with a new key, which is called the Inspire Key, priced at $1,599. New perks added to the high-level keys include parking discounts, free photo pass, and Genie Plus discounts.
Well, I know that there were a lot of people waiting with bated breath to figure out any of this information, because coming up very shortly here is when the keys first started to be sold. And as everybody knows, at the 1 year, you know, they're only good for 365 days for one calendar year. And that time is coming up quickly. So they had to announce this at some point so people could start planning and be ready to renew their keys. I do think it's interesting that they got rid of the Dream Key, which was the top end key. But I think that that is their kind of way of getting around. There was a lot of rumor and speculation online that the reason that they waited so long to put out information about the keys was because there's this lawsuit with these Dream Key holders. So I think they couldn't change it to like a new term with the Dream Key. I think they ended up just coming out with the Inspire Key to kind of just distance themselves. Also online, there's all the terms and conditions and all of those things have come out, and they're basically, you can't sue us for anything, you have to arbitrate, and you're not guaranteed admission. Even when there are days that have reservations, you can't do that. So they're really covering themselves this time. But I will say, I'm very, very happy to see that the price increases weren't astronomical as they could have been. And also, I'm excited that we actually have some information and they're not just getting rid of it, because that was also a rumor that maybe the key program would just go away and there wouldn't be annual passes anymore.
It's very true. I am personally very excited that they decided to add photo pass to the higher keys. This was something that we had back in the annual pass holder days. And I just, it was amazing. I just, there's something so special and so magical about Disney Photo Pass. Now, I'm not somebody that does enough Disney Photo Pass to warrant purchasing it outright every time I go for every day I'm there, but I like having the option of doing a couple photos here and there, and that was like perfect with the key. So that was my big like excitement and takeaway from the keys. Of course, very excited that they have announced it. I do feel bad because, like Tag was mentioning, we're coming up close to the anniversary, the 1 year anniversary of when keys first went on sale. However, some people already had lost access to the park via their key, because if you had upgraded with a ticket per se, your date pushed back, if that makes sense. So say you had a multi-day ticket that you used instead of the day that you upgrade to the key, your renewal date ends up being the first day you use the ticket. So some people already had been seeing their keys expiring, so they were really in a limbo. So I'm glad we know what our options are, we know what the plan is, and keys go on sale soon, so that's even better. So they didn't leave themselves much time between the announcement and when you can purchase these. Now, this is renewal only. So if you did not have a key before, unfortunately, at this time, you will not be able to purchase a new key. However, if you were if you are a current key holder or a previous key holder that had expired, you can. These are the options for the renewals. No word yet on if new purchases will be made available. I'm sure it depends on how sales go for the renewals. But yeah, like Teg mentioned earlier, feel like this is all kind of Disney walking on thin ice because of this ongoing lawsuit right now. So they're playing it safe and playing it cautious until that gets settled.
So a couple of new things quickly here. I'm just going to go from key to key and kind of explain the new things for each level. So the Imagine Key, which is $449. This is only available to Southern California residents. The two new things are 25% off standard theme park parking at the Toy Story lot and 20% off the Disney Genie Plus service. For the Enchant Key, that is going up to $699. And new with this was the same 25% off standard theme park parking and 20% off Disney Genie Plus service. The Believe Key is increasing to $1,099. You get unlimited Disney PhotoPass included and 20% off Disney Genie Plus. And then for the new Inspire Key, you're basically getting everything you had with the Dream Key. It's $15.99, like we said earlier. It comes with the photo pass and the 20% off as well. So
the one big thing, though, that the new Inspire Key has that the Dream Key does not is there are blockout dates for the new Inspire Key. Those blockout dates are December 21st through January 1st. So over the holiday season, there is when you're blocked out. But you do have the availability to make reservations for the rest of the year.
But that's not bad.
Not too terrible. Not at all. And you know, if that's something that's important to you, and if Disney brings you joy, then, you know, like we were talking about before, because we love Disneyland and I feel like we get very attached and we take things very personally, which I understand. But, you know, Disneyland at the heart of it is everyone's happy place. And so it's just we're going to focus on the positive here because this is giving us the opportunity to continue to go to our happy place without having to buy single day tickets every single time we go. So in the long run, this will still be saving us some money.
Oh, definitely. Well, speaking of the parks being a happy place, it's definitely a happy place in the Walt Disney Company right now. Last week, Disney had their quarterly earnings call and reported some great news for the theme parks division. Disney Parks, Experiences, and Products reported quarterly revenue of $7.4 billion. Up from $4.3 billion a year earlier. Last year, Disney Cruise Line was still shut down and the parks were still recovering, but it's still great news. However, there was one comment that made Disneyland fans in particular upset. They stated that the Genie Plus and Lightning Lane increased the per capita ticket revenue and, quote, partially offset by an unfavorable attendance mix at the Disneyland Resort, end quote. This led to Magic Key holders getting upset online about being unfavorable.
Which, rightfully so. I know I just said we're trying to stay positive, but this one was a little tough pill to swallow. I understand what they were trying to say. I think they chose a very poor way of saying it, though. Yes, of course, any type of annual pass holder, it doesn't matter if you're at Disneyland, Walt Disney World, Knott's Berry Farm, wherever it is that you have your annual pass, you're going more frequently. So you're still spending a lot of money over the year. It's just not as concentrated. You're not spending all of that money in, like, you know, whatever, a long weekend, as if this was, you know, the one visit you're spending. Well, I'm just making up numbers here. You're spending $1,000 in your one visit. So to Disney, they're like, cha-ching, that's great. We like these people that are only here for a limited amount of time spending the big bucks. So I get that they don't see the big picture as to how much over the course of time and over the span of the key, you're those people are spending, because are they spending $1,000 in it? That my made up number of $1,000 per day. OK, maybe. Yes, some of them are. But let's be realistic. Not everybody does. I would go broke if I spent $1,000 a day every day that I was at Disneyland. So I get what they're saying, that yes, of course, people that save for years to have this one trip, of course, they're going to spend more money in a shorter period of time than a key holder, an annual pass holder was. But I don't know why they I really don't know why they chose to say that and point that out and also use the term unfavorable. I just think that was a very poor wording choice and a very poor choice in total for them to include that piece. It's not a secret, right? This has been how it's been for a while. You have those quote unquote unfavorable people at Walt Disney World, too, but you have probably more vacationers to offset.
Yeah, I think if they just would have said that revenues, the per ticket capita was up, but it wasn't up as much at the Disneyland Resort because of the different mixture of types of ticket media or something like that. Well, you know, they didn't have to say unfavorable.
Well, and really, why'd they even have to point the finger at what group of people it was that they were choosing to blame? They could have just said it wasn't as high at the Disneyland Resort as we had hoped. Walt Disney World showed these numbers. Right. Disneyland showed those numbers. Move along. Let the numbers speak for themselves.
I think that would have caused a whole different thing, right? Because then the investor people would have been like, well, why was Disneyland different? And so they probably would have had mention it at some point. But I think that Disneyland should just lean into it, to be honest with you. I think that.
Oh, 100%.
That, you know, the Disney company should just realize Disneyland is different than all their other theme parks around the world. It's more of a locals park. And, you know, these pass holders and local people, they'll pay for a lot of stuff. And we're kind of seeing a lot of that, right? Because we're seeing like extra hours events and stuff like that, which Disney World doesn't do the same amount of. So I think that they're making money. And honestly, you know, I'm one of those business people that, like, I don't need to make a bunch of money. I just want to be able to afford to do what I want to do and pay my bills. And I feel like the Disney company, you know, and shareholders and stuff, you always look at that they're just trying to make more and more and more. And it's like, why can't we just be happy making a little bit of money? Why does it always have to be, we have to make more on people every time? I don't know.
it's the Scrooge McDucks of the world, I guess.
But it goes to prove what I keep saying, that the Disney Parks, Experiences, and Products division raking in cash. It's one of the best parts of the whole company right now. So that's awesome.
Now, the hope, as we mentioned, D23 Expo is coming up. I'm hoping that this might be foreshadowing and we might be getting some really fun and exciting news about that money going back into the parks.
They did say on that same earnings call that they were going to see an offset in profits going forward because they were going to do more capital expenditures in the parks. So
thank you. Thank you. That just makes me so much more excited. So there's our positivity in that not so positive bit of news. Well, Magic Band Plus hasn't come to Disneyland just yet, but there's already a new interactive game under construction that uses the technology. Batu Bounty Hunters has already launched in Walt Disney World's version of Batu and will launch at Disneyland when Magic Band Plus system launches by the end of this year. The game will require the Play Disney Parks app and a Magic Band Plus. The Magic Band Plus will change colors depending on if you're heading in the right direction and change to purple when the bounty is found. WDW News Today had a great write-up about the game, which we have linked in the show notes. I also want to mention Ordinary Adventures had a really great video of them playing the new Bounty Hunter game in Walt Disney World. If you're more of a visual person, that was really fun.
WDW News Today also had a video, which is where I got a lot of the info about, because they were there the day it opened at Disney World with Magic Band Plus. And it was really interesting. I actually showed the video to producer James today and asked what he thought of this, because he actually liked the Play Disney Parks app where you could go through and scan the things and do all the stuff in Batu. Yeah. He's like, I could spend a whole day here and do this, which, you know, not my thing, but he thought was cool. But this game I thought looked cool. I would totally play this game. I love the idea that it interacts with the Magic Bands. And the new Magic Bands, the Magic Band Plus, they do different colors on the band and stuff. So it was pretty cool. The only thing that's a little strange is they walk you through it on the app. And then when you go up to the, you know, the starting point, basically, to scan your Magic Band and start, it goes through all the same instructions again. So that's kind of slows it down. There is only the one scan point. So if there's a lot of people who want to play it, there can be kind of a wait. Also, every time you come back for a new bounty, you've got to go to that same kiosk. So if it ends up being really, really popular, I would hope that Disney would add more of these locations around Batu. But basically, you go up and you scan. It gives you a person. you walk around, it kind of does that. What is it when you're a kid? It's like getting hotter, getting colder.
It's like warmer, colder.
Yep. Yeah. And so you go around, and the person who was doing it for WDW News Today said that he thought it was really responsive, because he would stand someplace and then he would walk just a couple feet and it would start blinking red, like, nope, not that way. And I'm like, that's amazing. I don't even understand how this works. But looked really cool. He was able to get through 6 different people. The rumor is that there are 20. Once you get to all 20 of the people found, you become like a bounty hunter, I guess. I have not seen what that looks like with anybody yet. He did say if you are going to play this game and you're going to do it more than 6 or 7 bounties, to make sure that you bring a portable charger for your Magic Band and for your phone, because both eat quite a bit of, I mean, obviously, if you're thinking about, you know, colors and stuff and vibrations on your Magic Band, that's going to eat up quick. But I'm really excited. What do you think about this, Teresa? I know, like, I love the idea of this. This could be cool. They should do stuff like this in other places in the park.
It reminds me of what was the thing that they had at Walt Disney World that was like the Wizard Quest or something?
Sorcerer, something like that.
Unfortunately, when we went to Walt Disney World last, it was not running because of COVID. They did give us the cards, but I always thought that seemed like such a fun interactive game around the parks, and I always wanted to experience it. So,
Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom.
Okay. So I always wanted to experience that. I thought it sounded so fun, and I was quite jealous that we didn't have something like that at Disneyland. Because really, I feel like Disneyland would be a good place for that, because like we were just talking, it's a locals park. So you could go back multiple times and really like get into this game and get really involved. And this would be something fun that's not attractions or parades or whatever. It would just kind of be another level or another layer of things to experience at Disneyland. So this is kind of a mini version of that. It only happens, of course, in Batuu. I did like, yes, it does use your phones. That's not, you know, how I feel about us always having to have our phones and doing things with our phones. So it does use your phones. However, for the most part, you're just reacting to your band telling you where to go. You only use your phone when you get to where the bounty is, because your phone, like, quote unquote, scans behind the door of where your bounty is and kind of like shows you the shadow. And so you can see your bounty on the other side of it. Since they don't have actual physical characters or physical props for the bounty. It's all, your bounties are all digital, I guess would be a good way of saying it. So I was okay with it. It wasn't reliant on it, but it was the technology is really kind of interesting when you think about how they make this happen and how they make this work. Magic, I tell you. Magic.
Well, the other thing, I don't know if you noticed, and the guy for WDW News Today figured out towards the end of his gameplay that not only will it vibrate on your wrist and turn purple, which just means that you're there, but there's also a panel next to the door that will also chirp and make noises. So you kind of can tell, because sometimes there's areas where there's a couple doors in close proximity and you may not for sure know which one. But the idea behind this is really great. I'm very excited. I want to play this whenever Magic Band Plus comes to Disneyland. I'm really interested to play this and see how it goes. And, you know, they had another game in Disney World that was kind of like a treasure hunt thing that was in their Frontierland and Adventureland area about pirates. You could do the same thing with that, I think, as well. So I hope that this is successful, and I hope that they're able to expand it to other areas of the park, because especially for locals, like you said, it'd be great to have something to go and do different in the park that's not just standing in line waiting for an attraction, but exploring different areas of the park and seeing things maybe you didn't pay attention to before. Because we always talk about all those details.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, weekly tiers who want to know what's going on with Toontown, we have an update for you. Mice Chat has posted some new aerial photos of the work going on back there. Goofy's house has been repainted. The area where the new Cartoonial Park will be has been cleared, along with all of the paving in the land. Mickey and Minnie's houses are surrounded by scaffolding and are being repainted, as is the Toontown Mountains above the neighborhood.
The one very, very sad thing that we also do need to report is that from these aerial photos, it appears that Chippendale's treehouse has been removed and is no longer. So
that's okay.
I feel like there's plans, and we haven't really seen what those plans are. There's speculation, of course. There's always speculation. But I'm curious, you know, why Disney removed it. Because it was back in its prime, it was a very fun, like, playhouse type thing for kids to do and kind of climb and explore on. So I don't know, you know, was it a safety thing? Was it a germs that I don't know what was. I'm wondering what the actual reason was for them to remove it, or is something else going to be taking up that space, so they had to remove it to bring something something else new in. Because the other thing that I don't think I had realized this before, but Gadget's Go Coaster will remain, but it's going to be rethemed. So do they maybe need Chippendale's Treehouse property for whatever is going on with the coaster?
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah, was that I did not realize that that was going to get a retheme either. And so maybe it's going to be an extended queue area. Maybe it's going to be part of this new attraction. Like, I don't know. I don't even know would go there. What is a Toon property that a roller coaster would be good for? That's a great question.
Unless maybe it's going to be themed to Chip and Dale.
That's true. It could just be, with the new movie that was on Disney Plus, which was pretty okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be interesting.
Time will tell. Well, there was a traffic accident this past week, but it wasn't on any of the local Anaheim roads. It was on the Autopia track. Images posted on Instagram show two Autopia vehicles had somehow been driven up on top of one of the concrete barriers. This would have been extremely difficult to do by accident, as the cars are only limited to 5 miles per hour. The two vehicles appear to have been pushed up onto the concrete by colliding into one another. Cast members were unsure how this happened when they came across the scene.
A
mystery.
Well, I have a few questions here. So one, obviously, like you said, they only go 5 miles per hour. It's not like you're getting like I've rammed into the, you know, the center divide thing and going full speed. And I never thought I was going to pop off the track. That's one. Two, I feel like there's cast members all over that attraction. So how this could, well, two things, right? How could cast members have not seen when it happened? Because I feel like they're all over the place. But also, where did the guests that were in the vehicle go?
I know, that's what I wondered too.
Running? Did they like run off the track? And how did a cast member not see that either?
It's wild.
There are so many questions.
I it had to have been something like if they hit, like maybe the cars collided and it happened at just the right angle that it somehow popped them up. I don't know. And you would think that there's security camera footage of this somewhere, or somebody saw something and they'll get to the bottom of this, but it is quite the mystery.
Bob Gurr did it. You know, he's just like, boom. He loves his Autopia cars. Yeah. It's just so strange to me. I mean, there's so many questions I have about this. And it's a big curb that they got onto as well. So
it
I
is.
Don't know.
No, it is.
Well, some new menu items are coming to a popular eatery in Galaxy's Edge. Docu Bay 7 will have the new menu items starting the day this episode goes live. The items include a new cold brew with taro topper, which is nitro cold brew topped with sweet taro cream. The other item is a Gungan broth noodles, which is roasted pork, angel hair pasta, bok choy mushrooms, yuzu tomato compote, and a pesto tonkatsu broth. This sounds really good. But I know you're probably more excited about the cold brew.
I am interested in the cold brew, but I also wanted to mention that even more new food has been announced that will be coming to the Disney parks. More. The Disney food blog posted that these items that I'm about to mention will be starting on August 17th. So soon, like today, as you're listening to this episode, Wednesday, August 17th. But the Golden Horseshoe will have a cookie butter churro sundae. Yum. You can get that just as a sundae, or you can get it in the Magic Key ear hat bowl. There's also going to be Impossible chili cheese fries. Over at the Hungry Bear restaurant, there is a honey funnel cake. The refreshment corner will be serving up an Italian sausage dog. This sounds delightful. Everything else I felt was pretty self-explanatory, but the Italian sausage dog is Italian sausage, spicy marinara, mozzarella cheese sauce, mozzarella, and fried pepperoni on a hoagie roll, and it includes either a Cutie's Mandarin Orange or a small bag of chips. That's like a pizza sandwich or something. Over at the Jolly Holiday Bakery, there's pumpkin muffins. There's a new salsa roja chicken sandwich combo, which is shredded chicken, roja sauce, Monterey Jack, and cojita cheese, topped with tortilla strips and served with tortilla soup. Jolly Holiday is getting cold brew and a nitro cold brew. You know how I love cold brew, and I love that we have another cold brew location added to the list. This is awesome. Stage Door Cafe also has the Impossible chili cheese fries, and there's also a strawberry funnel cake. And then over at Alien Pizza Planet, there's Magic Key Mickey Ear Hat Bowl Pasta Special, which is pasta sauce topped in a creamy cheese sauce topped with mozzarella, a zesty marinara, and cupped pepperoni. There is a Countdown Shrimp Fusilli Supernova Pasta Special, which is with seasonal vegetable. Oh, the Supernova pasta special is plant-based, and it's with seasonal vegetables served over chef's choice of pasta. And then there's a Centurion shrimp Caesar salad.
Over at Galactic Grill, there's a Galactic Breakfast Bowl, which is seasoned potato bites topped with scrambled eggs, cheese, maple, sausage, and country gravy. There's an Impossible Breakfast Bowl, which is also plant-based, which is potato bites topped with sausage, grilled peppers and onions, egg and cheddar. There's a fried chicken sandwich, which is topped with spicy slaw and Parmesan ranch, with the choice of Greek yogurt or French fries. And finally, chicken tenders.
So, are you curious about that Galactic Breakfast Bowl? There's seasoned potato bites.
I know. That got me excited. I want to get back to the cold brew with taro topper. What do you think about that?
You know how I am with cold brews. I need to try it. Like, I have to try them. Because you never know. Some of the ones that they have come out with maybe didn't sound like to me it would be something I would enjoy, but I still feel like I need to try it. And then there's other ones that sound amazing. And then I try it and I'm like, that wasn't quite as great as you just never know. The things that I get excited about, I try it and I don't like as much. And then other things that I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. I try and they end up being great. So I'm all for it.
And the good news is now they have enough cold brews all around. And since you get a coffee every day, you could just get a new one every day.
Yep, exactly. Some days, let's be honest, I end up getting two.
That's true.
One in the morning, one in the afternoon.
But you got to try them all, man. You got to try them all.
They're just delicious. It's like anything, like churros. I mean, it's just so fun and exciting that they keep coming out with new options. But the thing that I just like so much about all of the coffee and cold brew options is that you're spreading that out throughout the resort. Whereas before, if you wanted some sort of something that wasn't just black coffee, you were very limited and you had to go to Market House or Fiddler and Fife, aka the two Starbucks locations. And everybody was there because that was the one spot in each park to get coffee. So I like that they have options and that the options are multiple locations.
I totally agree, because that was always a pain, and it seemed like no matter what, there was always a line.
Yes. Speaking of exciting flavors of things, we reported a couple weeks ago about a couple of new hand pies at the resort. Well, now it seems like they are all over the place with almost as many varieties as churros, if that's even possible. Guests can get a strawberry hand pie over at the Candy Palace, lemon flavored at the Honey Spot back near Pooh's Corner, blueberry at Trolley Treats, raspberry at Bing Bong's, and guava in Marsland's and Downtown Disney. Reports online have been extremely favorable to the new line of treats, especially the pastry part. Everyone says that it's so like flaky and buttery.
I'm
excited to try this.
Usually just looking at it, I would not be inclined to have one. I mean, they look fine. They look like Pop-Tarts. and like Pop-Tarts are fine, but like there's plenty of other things at Disneyland that I would like to eat. However, judging by the description of this pastry that they put it in, I now want to try one. Now the question will be, which one do I want to try? I'm not going to try all of, unless it's fantastically good, then I will probably have to try all of them. But I'm not going to try the lemon one. Let's be honest. I'm not a lemon fan. But these sound really great. And it sounds like they also are not too sweet, which is good. A lot of people have trouble with these type of things being really like a hit of sugar, but not these. So I'm very excited. Well, guests have been unhappy with the paper straws in the parks for some time now. Now, there's a new eco-friendly option available at the Candy Palace on Main Street. The new straw option is an edible straw, which comes in three flavors, strawberry, lemon, and lime. Each straw costs $1, and the Disney Food Blog reports that they don't get mushy like the paper straws. For weekly tiers who'd like to try these at home, Amazon.com also sells the same brand with the same flavors online.
You can also find these new candy straws in DCA at Bing Bong's too. So right now it sounds like what you can get these straws with are kind of more like the sweet options of drinks. So think things like the different slushies, or over at Bing Bong's like the mind erasers. So to me, to have a candy straw to eat, to drink an incredible, like a overly sugar, don't get me wrong, I love the drinks, but a very sugary, very flavorful drink, to me that sounds a bit overload. I do think it'd be cool if at dining locations you could opt for these straws for, say, like your soda, because I'm thinking, wouldn't it be fun to have a strawberry straw with like a Sprite, you know, and have, then you have like a strawberry Sprite. You could almost like mix and match and maybe have like a lime straw with your Coke. And so you have a Coke lime or whatever. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Would you try any of these in any of your cold brews?
No. I just realized how ridiculous I probably sounded since I'm like, I'll drink it in a soda, but not a slushy.
Well, but soda, a slushy is so much sweeter, it feels like.
I know it is. But it just like, basically, it's sugary drink over sugary drink. I think I would enjoy the candy straws in like a soda more so than a dessert type drink, if that makes sense.
I'm just curious because so the cardboard straws disintegrate pretty quick. These apparently don't disintegrate, but they're edible. So I'm trying to figure out, are they super hard or are they like a Tootsie Roll? Not a Tootsie Roll, but like a lollipop? Like, do you just have to like suck on them for a long time before they start to decompose?
So curious about these. So curious.
I would order one on Amazon, but they're like $40 a box. You get 200 of them.
It is because it's a big box. It is a big box of these straws. So, yeah, I'm wildly curious. We're going to have to try one of these when we're there next.
For a dollar. It's just a dollar.
Why not? Yep. A shop in New Orleans Square is getting a new mix of products from a different vendor. Marie Antoinette's Perfumery will start offering a large collection of the Guerlain fragrances and cosmetics. I am so sorry. I'm sure I butchered that. But I have mixed feelings about this. What is your thoughts?
I don't know about any of this stuff. You could one brand or another. Doesn't matter to me. Although,
yeah,
I will say if we're talking cosmetics and you want to hear a really terrible story I haven't told you already.
Gosh.
So for those of you who don't know, producer James and I went on a cruise that we just got back from, which is why last week we just had the interview from Terry Harden, which was amazing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to so judge me, Teresa. So the first day of our cruise, we had a couples massage and the spa lady talked me into buying two bottles of two different things. She was trying to get me to buy three. And each bottle of stuff was like $50 and $60 a piece, which like I think is outrageous. But anyway, it's kind of like that. I feel like with makeup and stuff, you could go in and like, and I don't know what the difference between all these different things and how much things cost. But I'm sure that there is a group of people that go to these locations at the Disney parks and they buy these high end things. And it's maybe the one time a year they buy this stuff.
Yeah.
And this brand special is a better known brand. I don't know.
I'm not sure. It's not something that I'm familiar with. But the one thing that I just hope is that the perfumery is not going to just become like a single brand shop. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I like right now there's variety. So there's all different types of things.
Don't they
in
like
there,
mix
from my understanding.
Stuff too and like make special perfume for you in there?
They used to. I don't know if okay. they still do, but I believe that that used to be a thing. Like I said, I don't know if it currently is or not, but okay. it's one of those cool things. Like, how do I want to say this? Like they took, so for example, over in Cars Land, there's now generic Disney merch in Cars Land shops. And that just makes me kind of sad because I'm all about the theming. You know how, you know me. All about the theming. And so I really liked that to get Cars Land merchandise, you needed to be in Cars Land. We have our general shops that can sell the general merchandise, you know, up front, that, you know, like the Emporium, World of Disney, those, there's plenty of places to get the general stuff. I thought it was so cool that we had themed shops. And so that's kind of how I felt with the perfumery. So it's almost like it's taking away a little bit of that specialness if you just kind of make it one brand. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be wrong. It could be primarily this one brand and some other brands, but still, I wish it would have been kind of just the mix.
So I have a question for you. This is going to sound really terrible. I'm sorry, DL Weekly listeners, that I'm not aware of this. Where is this shop in New Orleans Square?
New Orleans Square. Okay, so if you come out of I'd have to show you on a map.
Okay, so I know where is it in relation to like the Pandora shop?
Like to the left.
So if you walk out into the thing and Club 33 or the Court of Angels is kind of in front of you, it'd be off to the left.
It's like on the corner.
Where's producer James with his "Where am I in the park?" business?
It's kind of down like one of the little like side streety things.
Okay, you're gonna be surprised by this. So if you're looking at the park map in the app, there's what is it, Royal Street, which is like where Blue Bayou is, and it curves around and it goes, you know, that continues along and goes up towards the bathrooms and everything. There's that middle path that goes basically if you get halfway through New Orleans Square and basically leave it. It goes right out to the walkway. I don't think I ever go down that part of New Orleans Square.
It's a less traveled road, we'll say. It's kind of one of the little back areas.
I feel like I need to go through that part of the park when we go next time, because I don't think I may have gone down there once or twice, but yeah, I don't think I ever go up or down this aisle. That's really funny.
The only time that I had been near it was when I went, like when we go to Cafe Orleans.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, I don't ever go down there. That's crazy. Well, there may still be a couple weeks of summer left, but Halloween is quickly starting to appear around the resort. The Plaza Point Holiday Shop already has Halloween-themed items available. The Redwood Creek Challenge Trail is currently closed to guests as it transforms into Villains Grove for the Oogie Boogie Bash parties. Main Street and Buena Vista Street window displays are changing over as well.
This is going to be such a wild time to kind of follow the transformation, because right before we started recording, the Disney Food blog posted yet more Halloween decor in Cars Land, the like giant scary cones up in Cars Land now. So from when we were first putting this together this morning and this afternoon to now we're recording it tonight, there's already more reports that more Halloween has been popping up. So day by day, hour by hour, we're going to just get more and more spooky stuff.
And if you want to blow your mind even more, some listeners may not know this, Disney World just a couple days ago had their first Halloween party at the Magic Kingdom. So that's crazy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So not only is it the cones, but if you go over to Sarge's Surplus Hut, there are green spiderwebs above the building.
Wow.
There's ghost cars that are hanging out above the Taste In Fuel shop. And Tomater has his bat wings on the Tomater sign.
Well, Cars Land is just really getting into the act early.
I know. That was quick. That was very quick. Weekly tiers who like to participate in the scavenger hunts should get excited. I know I am. Pluto's Pumpkin Pursuit is coming back this year. Like in previous years, guests can purchase a game board to start hunting for the decorated pumpkins scattered around downtown Disney. Once all the pumpkins have been found, the completed game board can be turned in for a special surprise. Last year, it was a choice of a plastic sipper.
And for those of you who look at our YouTube channel ever, we did a live stream of Teresa wandering around and finding some of the summer all. Was it all of them?
It was. I think we did all of them. That was last. It's already been a year. That was last year we did that.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Just so you guys know, too, if you do go and watch it, you can't hear Teresa most of the time. We did buy some equipment now that will allow us to do this better in the future. So that is great.
Because of this live stream, we were like, oh, no. So we invested in better equipment. So hopefully it will be better the next time we do a live stream at the parks.
Yeah. What do you think the thing will be this year? Do you think it'll be sippers again?
I don't know. I don't think it'll be sippers again.
What was it year? Was it something before that, or was the eggs, wasn't it? No, that was for the egg hunt.
For the egg hunt, it's always different fun themed Easter eggs. I'm not sure what it was the year prior to. I don't know what the prize was before.
Huh. It'll probably be going when we're there, right?
I hope so.
We know Teresa will be doing it.
Yes. I would assume that it's going to. Halloween time starts at the resort, at the parks, on September 2nd. So I would assume that this will be in full swing at that point, too. So we'll have to see. I'm curious what the prize will be this year.
What'll happen is that first day of D23, we'll be tired and you'll be like, we got to go do the pumpkin pursuit.
I'm just going to like crawl around doing the pumpkin pursuit.
Oh, you'll have the energy for it.
That's true. I'll like have my fourth or fifth win by that point.
Detail-oriented guests may have noticed some changes to some of the grass areas of Main Street recently. Some of the sections have been replaced by artificial turf. Based on the lack of rainfall in California, this might be a good replacement for the greenery. The new turf is almost indistinguishable from real grass that will require less upkeep.
They have some of this same AstroTurf back in Fantasyland, and it took, like, I think you and I were actually, like, poking at it, or maybe it was Vern and I that were, like, inspecting this so up close because it looks so real that we're like, that's gotta be, because it's not actually on a like a raised bed. It's over by Pinocchio's Adventure. I want to say it might be the like near the exit of Pinocchio, but it's this raised area, and so we're just like, that has to be fake.
And what didn't
how do
help
you mow it?
What didn't help was that there is a
there's sprinklers,
there's a sprinkler head right there too. Yeah. So it was really messing with us.
Yeah So it fooled us, that's for darn sure. So I think this makes sense.
Yeah.
Because just the maintenance and upkeep on trying to go in there and keep the grass mowed and keep it looking nice. You know, that's a lot of extra time, energy, and effort. And it, you know, does it, I don't know how much of a difference it makes, because the stuff they put in is just so freakishly realistic that you, if you didn't know, you wouldn't know, kind of.
Well, and I think it's more environmentally friendly too, because grass takes up a lot of, you know, water and everything like that. And, you know, when they're mowing it and stuff, I'm sure they're using fuels to do all that stuff. Oh, yeah. So it's good to, and it's more durable. So if you do have people that get over the fences and walk on it and stuff, it's not going to damage it as easily.
That's true. Well, fans of the new I Am Groot series on Disney Plus can now get a new magic shot with their favorite baby Groot character. Guests interested in this magic shot need to head into Avengers Campus and be sure to ask your PhotoPass photographer for the Groot shot. This sounds, it looks so cute.
Now, have you had a chance to watch these?
The series? I have not.
So they're very short. They're like 3 to 5 minutes each.
Oh, and so I think you're saying I have plenty of time.
I think they're only like 5 minutes, five of them total, I think, five or six. And okay. I actually watched them today because we did, our exchange student from Moldova has been waiting to watch this with us. So because James and I were both home today, we did a group watch and we watched all of them together. And it was super cute. There was a couple in there. There was a couple jokes they had in there that was really good, like really funny or like shocking in the moment. So I highly recommend it. But I'm glad that they're doing some additional things with some of these magic shots. You know, with those, like we talked about earlier, with magic keys getting some photo pass included, these things will be even cooler. I didn't know, actually, that you could ask your PhotoPass photographer for different magic shots.
I didn't know that either. Good tip.
Reminder for all weekly tiers. These questions can feel like a high-speed roller coaster type ride in the dark, with self-high fives, sudden drops, and stumps. Follow all pre-launch procedures, including stowing hats, glasses, and all loose possessions in the cargo pouch located directly in front of you.
Well, hello and welcome to Trivia Land. I am excited for what we have in store for this week. I hope you two are feeling the same joy. Our first question this week is, of the attractions that have a height requirement in the Disneyland park, which is the shortest?
Ooh, I feel like it's got to be something like Jumpin' Jellyfish.
It says he said in Disneyland park.
Oh, in Disneyland. Okay, sorry.
Disneyland park, yes.
Good thing you reminded me of that.
You know what it is?
Otherwise.
Okay, so James, you'll have to tell me if this is wrong, because I feel like it's unfair if you're not looking at it the same way. Is it that you have a height requirement to go by yourself? Because if that's the case, then it could be Autopia.
I mean, I don't feel like I can give you this information. I just want to know about height
requirements.
Okay,
well, I'm going to say Autopia.
I'm torn between Big Thunder or Splash.
Ooh. It could be Splash.
I'm going to say Splash.
Fun guesses. Let's move on to our second question, which was helped by listener Donna S. This is a two-part question. How much did it cost to build Disneyland when it first opened? And how much money would the equivalent of that be in 2020 timeframe?
Well, wasn't it $17 million?
Was it $17 million? I don't know. I think, or was it one point? What was the budget? I think the
budget was tiny, but they went over it.
Yeah, they went over.
I think it was $17 million because I think later when they built New Orleans Square, it was also $17 million. So it was kind of weird because it was like, we built one land for the same price we built the whole park for.
Right.
So I think it was $17 million. If you adjust that, I'll say $750 million in 2020 dollars.
Teresa, gosh, what do you
feel? I thought it was like, maybe I'll say $7 million. I don't know. We'll say that's $500 million today.
Well, while we're talking about money of then versus now, listener Chrissy A. wants to know, how much more expensive is it to buy a Monte Cristo and a soft drink today versus the same sandwich and a glass of iced tea in 1970 at the Blue Bayou?
What the heck, people? Where are you getting this stuff from?
Man, these are stumpers.
I want to say I remember seeing a Blue Bayou menu and like one of the like steak things was like $2 and something back in the day. So I'm going to say a Monte Cristo and a tea, I'm going to say like $3.
So how much more expensive is it now than it was then?
Oh, is that what we're looking for?
Yeah, I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to say $17.
Because a Monte Cristo today is what?
I don't know.
$20 maybe?
$17.
And then a drink is like $4. Yeah, so I'll say like $18 difference.
All right. And our last question this week, I'll give you a better shot, I guess. Since you're both feeling a little down. We're talking about cast member costumes. So this cast member wears some plain blue slacks and a hat that reminds me of an updated cap the boys wore in Newsies. The color of the hat matches the pants. The shirt is much more exciting with some orange lines, fancy fasteners, along with areas of white, light blue, and more of the blue that matches the slacks and the hats.
Is this in Disneyland or DCA?
Disneyland.
Dang it.
I thought it was a red car trolley or something.
It sounded like Goofy Sky School. I'm trying to remember what our...
The thing that's throwing me off is the hat.
I'm going to say Gadget's Go Coaster.
Oh. Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin? I don't know. That's what I'm going to say.
Both living in Toontown. Are they going the right direction, listeners?
Sure not.
How are you feeling about this week's questions? We'll get back to them after this week's discussion topic.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are speaking with current Disneyland guest relations cast member and super fan, Philander. So welcome, Philander, to the show.
Hello, everyone. I'm very happy to be here.
So we first met Philander during Touch of Disney. Mm-hmm. He was actually out in the Esplanade doing some Disney trivia, which kind of brings into the discussion topic because he has such a wealth of knowledge just about the park and design and just everything. It's
Do you remember what we talked with Philander about?
I will when you say it.
We were picking your brain about web slingers.
Oh, that's right.
Yep, you had just done, like, there was just a cast member preview of it. And so we were chatting with you about web slingers. That was our big conversation topic, but it was really fun.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember you kind of giving a little bit of an explanation of it, and it sounded really cool. And so I remembered that when we went on it months later when everything finally opened. So, well, let's let everybody else in the audience learn a little bit more about you, Philander. So we're going to ask you the questions we ask everybody. So the first one, which I feel like could be very fascinating, tell us your Disney story. What got you interested in Disney or Disneyland? Could be as detailed as you like with this. Kind of what got you to where you are today?
Yeah, I didn't go a ton as a kid because, I know, shocker to most people in the world, Disneyland has always been expensive, just not right now. So I went maybe like once a year as a kid. My parents would always attach it to like a celebratory occasion. So like a birthday or graduation or, something that could sell, something I could count down on a calendar, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And I always loved it, like on a surface level, as like any person would. Obviously, the food is really great, characters, attractions, shows. Like, it's easy to just enjoy Disneyland without being a fan. But I remember I got a book, and I'm mad because every time I tell everybody about this book, I have to tell them that it's discontinued. So you have to buy a used one online. But it was a book that came out, I want to say it was 2007 or so. I mean, if not earlier. But it's a book called Imagineering Mountains. So it was a book specifically on the mountain ranges of the Disneyland Resort. And it was an older book because they were, you can tell the last mountain they're talking about is Expedition Everest. Because that had not opened yet. But that was for the first time that I started to look at Disneyland differently than just a theme park. Because people that don't necessarily are not fans or super fans, they will look at Universal Studios, Legoland, SeaWorld, Disneyland, they're all one big thing. There's the place to go and ride rides. To them, the history and all that stuff, it means nothing to them, which is, it's fine in its own way. But that was the first time I started to think like, wow, okay, people made these things. It wasn't, they just spring out of the ground, of course. Like, people made this stuff. And not only people, incredible, like artisans, like these incredible men and women who dedicated, some of them, big chunks of their life to create all this amazing things. And that opened up a massive rabbit hole for me that I dove fully into and submerged myself in the pool of, and that just kept spitballing over and over and over and over. And then it got to the point where I eventually got a job at Disneyland where I, like many, was an annual pass holder prior, and I spent time there and it was great. And I thought, oh, it'd be great to work here. My mom was actually quite afraid of it because she thought I would, get really tired of it, or like it would ruin it for me. Big mistake for her, because it actually enhanced it like times a thousand being there. Because it's special now, because you get to make the same kind of magic you enjoy getting and receiving yourself, you get to make for others. Because I've been a part of that just like everybody else. Because if I go to Walt Disney World, they don't know I work there. Like, they, unless it's like friends I've seen, but everyone doesn't know I work for the company. So they treat me like a guest. So it's fun to get to be on opposite ends of that. But that itself then turned into now a 10-year career at the resort with no signs of slowing down. I can tell you that. But yeah, I remember that book being the kind of change to it. And I still have it, which is great. But that was like the big switch for me. And of course, like everyone else, movies, TV shows, you know, that definitely did not help, you know, put me down the rabbit hole. But it was the history part of Disneyland. And then I think when you realize at an age about how old it is, then also you're like, okay, this is, you know, my daughter's five. She I could tell her Disneyland opened 3 months ago and she'd believe it, you know, and she wouldn't know any different. But it's when you realize the age and the history behind it, then that becomes like this big thing that I need to like search more and more. And that kind of created the person that you are talking to now.
That's amazing. You know, you said something about, you know, the mountains and, oh, they didn't just like pop out of the ground. People create them. I will never forget the first time I walked into Galaxy's Edge because so I enjoy Star Wars, but I'm not the super fan. I was just blown away, though. We were standing in the queue for the Millennium Falcon for Smuggler's Run. And I just remember looking at the like handrails. I'm like, these are brand new, but they're rusted and they look so worn. And like, look at this cement. Like, and the person we were with was just like, what? I'm like, you don't understand. This is amazing. It's new, but it's old. And, you know, whatever.
We were laughing about the restrooms when we were talking with Imagineering about the restrooms, because the restrooms are all super aged. They look like they're like dirty, but they're not. And they were wondering, like, I wonder if people think that these are dirty restrooms because they're aged down. And so they don't look like they're in good shape, but that's on purpose. So they were wondering, like, I wonder if people are going to complain about the bathrooms or not.
That's funny. I didn't think about that. I remember someone was like, look, the paint's already chipping off. I'm like, no, that was intentional. That's supposed to look like that. It's not actually chipping.
Like, have you ever seen a Star Wars movie? Everything looks old.
Such a nerd about the queue. It was ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. It was so fun.
What's really screwy with that stuff is, because I've seen this before, like Indiana Jones, I feel like there's a thing like this. So it looks rusty, but if it's actually worn, what will happen is the rusty like decoration will chip off and there'll be like a shiny new pole under it. And it's like, that's actually the bad stuff.
We don't want it to look new.
Right. Yeah, right. It's just incredible. It's really incredible. So when you enter as a guest on your first day or just any day, since obviously you live close by, do you have a certain way that you like to attack the park? Do you like to, you know, always go to Adventureland first, forward to Fantasyland? How do you start your park day?
For me, it is different, I think, than most people, because I am in there all the time.
Yep.
And I think for me, if I had to whittle it down, because I have no specific direction, I always let who I'm with, because I'm very rarely there alone. I will let friends or family, if I went with you all, I would let you all decide that, because I'm there constantly. And I look at that entire resort as something different, not even like a job aspect, because I know there are some cast members, I'm sure, that let's say in theory, if they work Indiana Jones, they may not want to be near that ride when they go to play, which I totally understand that.
Yep.
But for me, because I touch everything, and by touching everything, I mean, I have no boundaries at Disneyland. While most, I think almost every other cast member, every cast member there is bound by a land or an attraction or a space or a store, you know, at least for their shift. I have no boundaries anywhere. I could go anywhere I want, other than like restricted areas that only maintenance can go into, but I can go down to the hotels. I can walk through down Disney. I can go in shops. I can go in, walk through attractions, go behind them, in them, like other than restricted areas. So for me, especially the fact that I'm taking people on tours often as a part of my job, I kind of let the people I'm with dictate that. But if I had to give you an answer for the question, I will always go either through Frontierland or Adventureland, because the west side of Disneyland is better than the east side of Disneyland. And that's the only reason. So I love stuff more on the east side or on the west side than the east side.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll hear something about the west side that, or the east, Tomorrowland is what?
Oh,
east?
You're hoping. Hopefully for
we'll hear about some good announcements about Tomorrowland.
Hey.
Breathe a little hopefully. Life. Breathe a little life into Tomorrowland. Poor Tomorrowland.
Yeah. I mean, but you know what's funny? Okay, I'm I'm really good at derailing everything. Mm-hmm. David just did a whole video about like the people mover and how like it could come back or something. And he was talking about how he likes Tomorrowland just how it is. And with the extent, like it just needs a couple little things.
We'll make sure we talk about Tomorrowland because I actually have a question for you all.
Let's just bring it up.
We'll do now? Okay.
Why not?
So let's talk about Tomorrowland. So the fascinating thing about Tomorrowland is, yes, it is not in the best shape, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Tomorrowland has always not been the best shape because I tell people when it opened, it was also poor. But yeah, obviously people don't think back to Walt's time. The only pure good Tomorrowland was the 1967 new Tomorrowland. That's the only good one because then you had the poor 98 one and then it's still not in its best shape now. So the only good one is 1967 because the opening day one with all the like sponsors and no real like attractions is not good either.
Yeah.
And the weeds that got names on them. Like, that also was a poor Tomorrowland. So Tomorrowland for most of its existence has been in poor shape technically. Yeah. So I told people like, I'm not bothered by it now because most of its life, it's been in a constant state of development, you know? So, but the real issue with Tomorrowland is what people I think is the problem with it. So as an example, a family visiting from, here's that perspective we talked about earlier, a family visiting from, let's say Minnesota, they don't look at it like we do as like super fans. They go to Tomorrowland and in theory, that is their favorite land because they rode Space Mountain, Star Tours, Buzz Lightyear, Autopia the Subs. They love Tomorrowland because they're not looking at it from a design perspective. It just had a lot of great rides in it. So they have a blast. So the people that have the most problem with Tomorrowland are the fans because we know better, we know past, and we know what could be in the future. So we look at it with a completely different lens. So most of the average guest that visits is that Tomorrowland was great. I rode Space Mountain. I had lunch at Alien Pizza Planet. I rode Star Tours, Buzz Lightyear. They had a blast.
Yeah, so that's true.
A very unique perspective. So then when I talk to the super fans, so like you two, I will say, if there is a problem with Tomorrowland, what is that problem? Is it the fact that, and you can usually whittle everyone's things down to two things. One, Tomorrowland has an aesthetic problem. It doesn't look like it's from the future. You have like a lot of hodgepodge things that are in there. So you have Star Tours from 87, updated obviously 2011. You have Space Mountain from 77. You have Autopia, which is pseudo opening day because it's changed a ton. You have the subs from 59, but redone in 07 for Nemo. You have Buzz Lightyear in 05, and they all look different. It's like this hodgepodge of all these different, not only building shapes and looks, colors, but also intellectual property. So, so you have a lot of different things going on. So they've had to kind of piecemeal it over time. So Tomorrowland both aesthetically has an issue, one, and then also it's filled with a bunch of intellectual properties that don't match each other. Mm-hmm. So those are usually the two issues that people have. Every once in a while, people have a third one, but that's the two main problems. So then I deposit this question to people. If those are the problems, what's the big fix for Tomorrowland? Is it changing it aesthetically and then you're okay with it? Or is the problem still that they have all these weird issues in it? So I bring up Shanghai Disneyland because that is the newest Tomorrowland, in theory, the best looking one. It may not be the best one in theory because they also have an IP thing like that. So Tomorrowland in Shanghai, you have Tron, Stitch, Star Wars, and Buzz Lightyear. So all of them don't make sense together. Mm-hmm. When you look at the Tomorrowland, because it was built from the ground up, they all look like they belong together because all the buildings match each other. So their Tomorrowland is gorgeous because it was designed from the ground up and it matches everything, despite the fact that Buzz and Tron and Star Wars make but they look like they belong together because of the building shape and the aesthetic. But then now if you look at the IP problem, so let's say an intellectual property, Disney currently doesn't have any really strong future properties that they would place in Tomorrowland. And I think if you could whittle it down to two of the most popular that deal with either the future or space or anything like that, the only two you could, I think, would really come up with that the company would, in theory, put a lot of money into would be WALL-E and Big Hero 6.
Yep.
And because obviously, yes, Baymax is a robot, but Hero and the Big Hero 6 team, they deal in science and technology, which you could in theory. So obviously like Heroes nanotech stuff, that's very futuristic. And in theory, so much science fiction that we'll never see anything like that, at least not in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
And WALL-E obviously is future and space. So those two are the only theory. So my question to you all is this, if the other part of it is what you brought up, the nostalgia aspect is Autopia opening day, subs 59. obviously redone now. Space Mountain, you know, the most one of the most iconic mountains, maybe the most iconic mountain at any Disneyland range in any park around the world, 1977. The question for you all is, I would assume for you all, the most important thing in Tomorrowland is Space Mountain, right?
Yeah, I'd say.
Like, that is the...
If you're going to save one thing, that's the thing I would say.
I mean, I love the monorail, but yes. I think Space Mountain is something that I think the vast majority of people, there's two attractions that when we've talked to people, are there two like must stay, that's Star Tours, because, you know, we talked about getting it doesn't fit because you got Galaxy's Edge now, but they're never going to move it, but they don't want to lose it, and Space Mountain, I think, are the two big things. People aren't as attached to Buzz Lightyear because you've got Toy Story Midway Mania, and you've got the People Move, or not the People Move, you've got Haunted Mansion, which is kind of the same ride system.
Also now have Web Slingers, which is also
interactive. And you've got a few gaming attractions.
And the subs, like, people like the look of the lagoon there, but they don't like being cramped in that sub, you know. Americans are bigger than they were back when the subs were created, and people like to have their personal space, and like, it's just not great for all of that. And of course, like COVID, people don't like being in contained, trapped up areas, all of those things. Autopia, they don't like that it's gas guzzling and like not futuristic if they were to convert it to like electric. So for me, I think you hit what I think. There's a couple things I think they need to fix, and I'd be happy. One is, if they're not going to bring the People Mover back, and they're not going to put the rocket jets back up on the thing, that whole infrastructure that's there just needs to go away. Because it's just there. It just reminds you that there was something there and it's not there anymore. Uh-huh. The same thing with the Star Wars launch bay. Like, that's a huge footprint that they could put something there. But it's like this, like, nobody cares. Like, a lot of, even when it's Star Wars launch bay, people don't really go in there. So if they were to put like an attraction or something there instead... But the big thing that I always say about Tomorrowland is, I feel like Imagineering keeps getting saddled with, we don't want to destroy the buildings that are there, so just make it fit. I think keep Space Mountain. If people are really attached to Star Tours, keep Star Tours, I guess. Level the rest of the land, like start from scratch, have a blank canvas, and then do something cool with it. But if they're not going to do that, which it's Disney, they probably are not going to do that. I would say bring it, tie it together aesthetically, like you were saying, make the land look like it all belongs together. Mm-hmm. Bring it. Retro's cool right now. Bring back the 67 design, make everything white again. And, you know, somehow bring a lot of movement, put the rocket jets up somewhere that's a little more exciting, build something in that launch bay area. You know, with the Autopia, people don't want to lose it. Why don't you make it electric?
Yeah.
Why don't you put it elevated like the People Mover and have it like go around? Like, you could drive around elevated, so you get the cool view and it's the Autopia. Mm. I would ride that. I just don't ride Autopia now because it's like, first of all, it doesn't steer very well. It's loud. It smells like gas. Like, there's just a lot to it that is just not that appealing to me. And I know like little kids and stuff like it. And there's some fans in our audience that really enjoy it. But that's what I would say. I think aesthetically, bring it together. Get rid of the stuff that they've abandoned. Use some space better. They've got the Magic Eye. Well, it was the Magic Eye Theater.
Yeah.
The Tomorrowland Theater. It's empty right now. Do something with that. Do something. You know, it's just, there's just a lot of like reminders that it's not as cool as it once was. So you have to get rid of those reminders of people. And then I think people can like move on eventually from it. But like, there's this constant reminder, like the People Mover's not there anymore. The jets are not up on the thing anymore. Like, that's the whole thing for me.
Would you tear down all of Tomorrowland for a brand new Tomorrowland? Every bit of it, level the entirety of it for a brand new one designed by Imagineering?
If it was going to bring back stuff that was going to be... If they could replace Space Mountain with something that would be as popular as Space Mountain, I think it'd be fine. But I think that's hard because people love Space Mountain.
Because that's the tough thing, because the nostalgia factor, kind of like when you were talking... on your last one with, was it, you said Terry, right?
Terry Harden,
Yeah, the nostalgia factor is the tough thing because, like you mentioned with Disneyland, you have to now, people want new things, but they don't want to lose anything old to get the new. And that is a challenge for them because they have to stray this, like tightrope walk across this line about, like, what to keep and what not to keep. Because even now with Splash Mountain leaving, that, you know, when has it become a legacy or a classic? You know, Splash Mountain's 30 years old, you know, or... 30-ish, it was at 89. What is permanent, what can't stay and what can stay or not. So it's funny when I bring up that question to people about Space Mountain, because that's one of the biggest things people would keep, or the mm-hmm. things that mean the most to them. Some people are like, yeah, get rid of it. Some people are like, you have to keep it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, if you keep Space Mountain, now you have to design that new Tomorrowland around it to look like Space Mountain, because you're getting back into the hodgepodge. So then I propose the other question. Have you all seen the images of Tokyo?
I know where you're going. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is the facade is important to people? Like, can they change the outlook of it and then match the Tomorrowland to that? So it's like all these little things that add up to like what is to be done with Tomorrowland, because I will tell everybody, to be honest with everybody, every Tomorrowland is not good. All of them are bad.
Yeah.
Every single one. Like, people complain about Disneyland's one, sure, because you're here to see it, but all of them are poor except for Shanghai. And if you don't like intellectual properties that don't match, then they all are terrible. Mm-hmm. They all don't match.
Yep.
Shanghai just looks the best because it was built from the ground up. And then I would say number two would be Paris, their Discovery Island, which is not necessarily Tomorrowland in theory, but that one is also designed to look like it's all together. Granted, they have the hodgepodge because they have their hyperspace mountain, you know, amongst other things. Magic Kingdoms is going to be weird because now you have Tron, which is like this gorgeous, sleek, beautiful thing sitting next to the 1975 Space Mountain, and Autopia is sitting underneath it. So that doesn't match as well anymore. Then plus you have the IP problem again with Buzz. I mean, obviously Stitch used to be there, but he's gone now. Ours is poor. Hong Kong's has a IP problem as well, because half of theirs is Avengers. So they have the Iron Man experience and then the Ant-Man and the Wasp ride. All poor.
See, one argument that people make is that what they could have done with Tomorrowland is just put Galaxy's Edge where Tomorrowland is. Like, if they would have built Galaxy's Edge there, boom, people are like, there you go. That would have fixed the Tomorrowland problem. And I'm like, maybe?
Yeah.
And it's like, is it really Tomorrowland if that's the case anymore?
Right, you don't have to be Tomorrowland. You just replace it with Galaxy's Edge. And then it's like, well, Tomorrowland never works. Like you're saying, it never works anywhere. So why are we trying to force this to work?
Yeah, me, I think I wish, and I know it won't happen, but I just wish that Disney would take a step back from IP heavy things, because I think that's part of the issue. Is you've got, because it's vast, you've got so many different things, not just Disney, but Marvel and Star Wars, and you could just go. So it's hard to kind of bring those attractions and have it be coherent, like make sense in the space. So like, I mean, even Adventureland, as much as I love Adventureland, you had Indiana Jones next to Tarzan. You're not, you've been evicted. But like, you know, like you, like that didn't make sense. You had, you know, but it, yeah, it's just hard. And I think that's why you've got such classics and things like the Tiki Room and the Jungle Cruise, things that are just, they just exist because they're in Disneyland, I think is really what they need.
You get into this point now where IP has always been a big part of Disneyland, even though it's heavy now, but that was the case when it started, you know, because I'll make the point of reminding people that the original Disneyland is also very IP heavy.
Oh,
it's just IP in a unique and different way. So obviously Fantasyland is an easy call filled with movies. Sure. But Walt was not like he was a genius in so many ways, but a genius in knowing that if I need Disneyland to succeed, I need to put things in it that people are like super into, as an example. So when I tell someone Haunted Mansion is IP, they're like, well, no, it's not. I'm like, yeah, because Walt didn't invent haunted houses. Like, like the Haunted Mansion is not even the first like scary, like dark ride in the world. Like a haunted house ride that's been around for well before Haunted Mansion came. Disney did not invent pirates. Like pirates have always been popular. That like free-willing lifestyle of doing whatever you want and not getting in trouble for it and doing, you know, that is also technically an IP. You know, if anything, the most original attraction in Disneyland is probably It's a Small World, where there's just like, we're going to make a ride about kids and you go around the world. Like there's nothing based on it. Or even the, like Tomorrowland was built off of that time period's, the thrill of space travel and people going to the moon for the first time. Like that was what the world was into. So, or the Jungle Cruise is based off of Walt's and eventually is the True Life Adventures, you know, like all of these things. Frontierland is a nod to the past, but that was also filled with Zorro and Davy Crockett. Like Walt knew to put things that were popular in the moment in there right now. So Disney technically is doing the same thing now, but all of them are based around film and television as opposed to like the world is into space travel. Or back then, people didn't travel as much. So the true life adventurers were fascinating because flight around the world was not as prominent as it is now. So seeing, like, you know, jungles and animals and that was a big deal back then. Mm-hmm. But all of that is technically, in a way, some sort of property or intellectual property. It has some tie to something that's very popular for people. So when I tell people, like, yeah, Star Wars is here because Star Wars is popular, like,
yeah,
it's a really fascinating quote. I actually would love to read you guys of Walt's, that I always use when people are talking about intellectual property. And I love that you brought that up because that's been a big thing right now where people want the original rides. And I think we're going to a space now where the company is just not going to lean heavy on those anymore. Yeah. And if they do, it's not going to be here in the States. Like, that'll be overseas where they do that. As an example, you know, I would think the last major e-ticket that was original was Mystic Manor, I think, in Hong Kong was the very last one. But things like that and Expedition Everest, I don't think we're going to see a lot of anymore. And if we do, it'll just be far and in between, because the popularity, like having a built-in audience, you know, Disney, and I get it, for anyone running a business, doesn't want to gamble. Like, they're going to spend $200 million on an attraction. They want to know that people are going to come and see it. So making a $200 million Guardians of the Galaxy ride, they already know they have a built-in audience for it. They also know they're going to sell a ton of merch based off of it because they see they see box office receipts from these films. They see toys and things coming. They're like, this is just a win-win. You know, why would we not build something that we already know people love? You know what I mean? As opposed to the gamble. And I get it, because obviously Walt was willing to gamble. I like mentioning that the original Disneyland was Walt making sure that it would be a success. So he filled it with all the things he knew were popular at the time. But it wasn't until the 60s that he started to gamble. And now I'm going to just do what I want. But I need Disneyland to be popular first. I need to make money before I get weird. You know?
No, that makes total sense, though.
Because the weird stuff, that's what came next. I'm going to do different things now that I know Disneyland is good. So like Enchanted Tiki Room, just a bird show, just a bird show. Like, obviously the obsession with Tiki around that time period and like that Polynesian type culture, you know, that obviously helped. Or I'm going to make a submarine ride, you know, that has nothing to do with anything in particular. I'm going to make a mountain ride, you know, like with the bobsleds. I'm going to make, you know, I'm going to put Link in here. I'm going to create Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion, Disney, and Country Bears. Like, all that stuff that came in that time period is like very unique and different and not necessarily tied to some massive popular something or other. And that is, and I think that's where, you know, he got to experiment a lot more once it was a success. Obviously, the 64 World's Fair held with that. Mm-hmm. But this quote is the one that I read. It is like a really good quote because it's not a soundbitey one. So like Disney likes to use soundbitey ones that they can put on hats and t-shirts.
Like
he's only saying one or two sentences, you know, and we say the one that's very popular, as long as the imagination left the world, is that one we almost jokingly overuse at this point. It's a great quote. But there are other really good ones that he has said in the past that correlate very specifically to how Disneyland is being run right now, not from a business standpoint, but for what is going into the park specifically. And I like to say that one because it's really long. Like it's a long quote and it really breaks down the specifics about, you know, what Walt wanted out of Disneyland, you know, and not just like this place to stay stagnant and not, you know, grow. It needs to grow and change. So here is the quote. Ready? Strap in. A picture is a thing that once you wrap it up and turn it over to Technicolor, you're through. Snow White is a dead issue with me. The last picture I just finished, the one I just wrapped up a few weeks ago, it's gone. I can't touch it. There's things in it I don't like. I can't do anything about it. I wanted something live, something that could grow, something I could keep plussing with ideas. You see, the park is that. Not only can I add things, but even the trees will keep growing. The thing will get more beautiful every year. And as I find what the public likes, and when a picture's finished and I put it out, I find out what they like or they don't like. And I have to apply that to some other thing. I can't change that picture. So that's why I wanted that park. And that quote. So many things are written in there. First off, Snow White is dead to me. What?
Yeah.
Because we look at Snow White as this like, oh my God.
Yeah.
He put it out and he could care less anymore. He has moved on. So already no nostalgia there for Walt. He could care less. We joke amongst VIP tour guides, like at the park and like, and guest relations, that if Walt came back right now, he would not care. He in theory would be upset at a lot of things that people love. Actually, he would look at, like, you know, Autopia. Yeah. Why are these cars still driving here? Why aren't they doing anything else? Why aren't they flying?
Right.
Why are you guys still running the same Peter Pan ride here? Why is it not mm-hmm. doing anything else? The things he would look at would be Galaxy's Edge, Cars Land, Avengers Campus, all the new stuff. He would be probably pretty curious as to why we're still using the exact same stuff that he was there when he was alive. He's like, you guys still have this Snow White ride? Like, you haven't done anything new with it? That's probably, in theory, you know, I can't say because I'm not Walt, but mm-hmm. based off of, like, you don't really get to know someone unless you hear what they said. Like, mm-hmm. so reading about things he said, not just people who say, well, wouldn't like this, and they just say it because they don't like it and they want to pump it up because that makes them feel better about their decision. Like, if you listen to the things that he said, listen to him talk, you know, and read about him and talk to people. Like, I've had the great pleasure of meeting tons of people that have actually spoken to him, you know, and hear about those things. You get to hear and feel this, like, what was this man really like and what did he really want for this place? But yeah, Snow White is dead to me, one. And then the big one in here, I need to find out what the public likes. What do they like? They like Star Wars and Marvel right now. That's why it's in the park. Like, I know, that's why it's here. People like that stuff. So he's putting in the park what people want. You know, that's, you know, my biggest thing I like to say is, okay, so Sleeping Beauty Castle, they wanted to make that Snow White's castle, but Walt, knowing that Sleeping Beauty, the film, was coming out in 1959, mm-hmm. made the castle that beforehand. That castle is a giant advertisement.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a movie. Like, and if he's willing to do that for the active center point of the entire park, then then why? Like, it's a huge advertisement because that the movie didn't come out for another 4 years. But I'm pumping a thing that we're working on right now that you won't even see for 4 years. A big advertisement. And of course, obviously, it means so much more to us than that. But they chose to make it that castle as opposed to Snow White's, as opposed, you know, to sell this movie coming up. You know, Walt wasn't a stranger of using popular things to get people going, you know. Davy Crockett was super popular, so he had Fess Parker in the park to get people to come down to see him. Fess Parker, in theory, is a superhero character. Zorro came down the park, another superhero popular figure, and you could meet Zorro in the park, and they had the actual actors that come down to play. So Guy Williams and Fess Parker in the park. That is no different than going to the park to meet Iron Man or Captain America. That is mm-hmm. the exact same thing. And people sometimes just don't want to hear that because it's like, no, superheroes, no. And I was like, those were two superheroes back then. To that's kids, true. That's the exact same thing. Walt was not, you know, it wasn't like a, you know, he used every opportunity to put in things that people wanted in that park. And when you read through quotes like that, you're like, I wanted this place to be changing and constantly evolving. You know, obviously nostalgia is the thing that Walt did not live long enough to see. He would not know now that we revere, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean and Snow mm-hmm. White, Autopia, the monorail. We look at it like it's the holy grail of things. And he would be like, okay, I in theory. Yeah. And it's funny because you can look at Shanghai Disneyland. They chose specifically China to do nothing like the rest of the parks. Because to them, there's no nostalgia at all. They could care less about that stuff. To them, they love Disney as a whole, but they have no strong, like, attachment to anything. So that park is completely different, but still amazing. There's no train that goes around it. Mm-hmm. They don't have it's a small world. They don't have a Big Thunder. They don't have a Space Mountain. They don't have a Haunted Mansion. They don't have a Splash Mountain. Like, they chose to go off the books completely.
Yeah.
And that park is a great park for in its own different ways. Mm-hmm. They have, like, a Peter Pan. They have a few things that are mixed in, but they truly buck the trend because nostalgia is nothing to him. And Shanghai is not a lesser park because of that. Like, you know, we look at all these places so vastly different because we have such, our childhood is like seeped in this place. We have so many mm-hmm. memories growing up, and we bring our kids and our family, and it's been there for 67 years now. And it's such a part of, like, Americana and, like, Southern California history and California history that we all have these lenses that we look at it. You know, imagine taking someone to Disneyland that you've never taken before. What do you think their favorite things are going to be? In theory, they're not going to say Peter Pan's flight or the subs or.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you that. We've gone with people. I brought an exchange student from Poland.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he had never, he thought that Disneyland was a museum.
Yep.
Because I told him not to look up anything before he came. And he went the first week that he was here. And his favorite attraction was Guardians of the Galaxy.
It was, yep.
Because like he liked the thrill of it. I feel like a lot of the newer generation, we have people that listen to the podcast, Weekly Tears, who their favorite park is California Adventure because of the nostalgia. There's not a lot of nostalgia there. They're like, I like the bigger walkways. I like Cars Land a lot. I like Guardians of the Galaxy. That's kind of my jam. Where for me, like I grew up with Disneyland. Like Disneyland's always, we were talking about this on this trip that we have coming up for this D23 Expo, is we have a very short amount of time to be there, unfortunately, this time. So we're like, okay, which park are we going into and how much time are we going to spend at each park? And, you know, Disneyland, of course, when we do like a longer trip, first and last is always Disneyland because we want when we first get there to have that comfort of Disneyland, and we want our last memory of the resort to be that comfort of Disneyland.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I grew up in the Midwest and I didn't actually go to the first time I went to Disneyland was when I was, I think, sixth grade. It was my sixth grade graduation.
Awesome.
It was just a really weird excuse for us to go. So I don't have that same nostalgia, but there's just, like Tag was saying, it's a comfort level. And I don't know what it is, if it's just because it's always kind of been there and it's always, you know what to expect versus like, I think what's exciting about like California Adventure and just any of the other parks is I don't like when they take Disneyland and then just like replicate it. And now it's in Florida and now it's in Paris. And because what I think is so special is that I think each park needs to be unique and different, because otherwise, why do I need to go to Walt Disney World if I can see it, you know, if I can see it here? So I even appreciate now that I'm the level of Disney nerd that I am. We went to Walt Disney World in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was open and Disneyland wasn't. Because
it was open.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, just even being the level of nerd that I am, I could appreciate the differences in their Peter Pan attraction versus our Peter Pan attraction. But your typical guest is like, well, it's Peter Pan. Like, it's the same thing, even though technically, no, it's not. But it's the same thing.
Wasn't it Tony Baxter? I feel like I don't know where this quote came from. I think it was Tony Baxter, or at least Tony Baxter quoted it, that Disney World is like this whole, is like, I don't know. I don't know what part. I only know half the quote. But Disneyland's like a hug.
That's true.
And that's like the end of the quote. So I'm sorry that I forgot the first part of the quote.
Good quote. Good quote, Dick.
But that's kind of what it is. You go into Disneyland and so much stuff it's is packed comfort. In such a small place. Mm-hmm. And even if you take it as a whole resort, it's so much easier to like park hop than it is in like Disney World. Because Disney World, you got to like take a bus or a monorail or a Skyliner or some combination of all three to get where you want to go. And there's so much there where Disneyland's like, you know, I drop this a lot and people always are flabbergasted by it, that Disney World has less attractions than Disneyland does.
Well, that's 100%.
Yeah.
And there's crazy, four though. Parks. Well,
yeah.
Yeah. I jokingly told people that the Disneyland Fantasyland has more attractions than Hollywood Studios in it.
Well, Hollywood Studios has like almost nothing in it, even Hollywood with the additions they've done in the last few years.
Yeah.
And granted, the quality of the attraction is vastly different.
Yeah, yeah. But that's wild.
But yeah, there's 11 attractions in Fantasyland, and there are not that many, if you're counting rides, there are not that many in Hollywood Studios. There's more in that land than all of that. But there are more in the two parks than there are in all four of the ones at Walt Disney World. Granted, considerably more experiences, you know, that are at Walt Disney World. But if you're someone who loves attractions, the resort you should be going to is Disneyland.
I did have to laugh because when we were there in 2020, of course, reduced capacity. So, but we're like, oh, there's, you know, no wait or whatever. So I remember walking from Splash. I don't remember where we were going. I'm like, we're never going to get there. This park is huge. Like, it just takes forever to get across the park. Whereas in the time that we were walking, like, from Splash to Fantasyland, I'm like, this would have been, like, the east to west side of Disneyland by now.
Feels that way, yeah.
There is an absolute charm to Disneyland that will never be recreated again, which is why we hold it in such power, because Disneyland was created solely out of the brain of Walt Disney without any context to the future at all. Because every other park now has been designed with wider walkways and all that. They know masses of people are coming. They're laid out massive. Shanghai was built with room to grow. Like, all the parks are outside of their major cities because obviously the problems of the building right in Anaheim or like the funny thing I always tell people, Disneyland Paris is not actually in Paris. Like, it's just called that. Like, it's off to the, you know, it's, you have to take a train to get there. They learn so much from each park has learned from the last one, but like little tiny pockety places like New Orleans Square, they will never build that again. That was built for the time period. And that was it. Like, all of the tiny walkways, little corners, the little small spots, like all that was built because that was the way that Walt wanted it, like conceived from his brain, as opposed to every other one was contrived from the lessons learned from the past one. And that's why it's so special, because, you know, Walt had an actual hand in development. He wanted it just because he wanted it, not because, oh, we got to make this so much bigger because there's gonna be a lot of people, because they didn't even know how many people would come. Mm-hmm. You know, now, like, oh my God, all these, you know, the Magic Kingdom Main Street is like double the size of the one on Disneyland, because they knew, you know, we got to make room for parades. We got to make room for walkways. We have to make, or I think it's in Paris, I think, I can't remember, that has the behind the back Main Street that mm-hmm. you can walk yeah. around in the back. Like, they knew all this, they knew to build all this stuff. And that's why Disneyland is so special, because it has that hand of Walt, why Terry mentioned, like, you have to be very careful with this stuff, because mm-hmm. the people, the super fans, they look at it with these very distinct eyes, these very specific, like, lenses that you stare at these things. And the care that you have to put to all that stuff has to be so important, because I jokingly say we have fans that are so intense that I can move a trash can on Main Street down 10 feet and someone will complain about that tomorrow. Yeah.
Yep. They'll notice.
Move that trash can. That was Walt's favorite trash can. You know, they'll get upset, you know, and yeah. I'm like, and I think Bob Iger really, he put it very eloquently years ago, where he said, of course, it was about people that, you know, get upset and they sign petitions about when changes happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said, it is wonderful to have a fan base that is so passionate, you know, that they look at your product with such, like, awe, you know, mm-hmm. and such history that, you know, companies would love to have a fan bases like that. You know, Disneyland is fun in the sense that our problems are so unique. You know, we have a popularity problem. We're too popular. Mm-hmm. Everybody, businesses would love that. We have too much. We have too many people to give the product to, you know, like it, and that is, you have to work at that, something like yeah. that. You know, that doesn't happen overnight. That's 67 years of work, so that when you two visit Disneyland every time, your trip is either as good as it was last time or better. And that's what we're striving for every time that you visit. You know, we don't want you to backtrack on it. You know, we don't want to, like, lose that. At least we are hoping not to lose that, like, the love that you've generated over time, because that place is soaked in memories. You know, you remember sitting down for ice cream on Main Street, or that mm-hmm. time your friend had that funny picture on Space Mountain, or the time you got soaked on Splash Mountain down to your shoes, like soaked in memories there. And that's, you know, and the fact that it's been there that long is part of it. My dad remembers going on the teacups as a kid, then taking me on the teacups. And then he came when I took my daughter on the same teacup attraction, you know, yeah. and he's old enough now, he's 72. A lot of places that he went to as a kid they're gone. They're out of business. They're closed. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you have this place that is still here, and that you can continue to bring generation after generation, they will bring their kids and they will bring their kids over and over. And these same things are here, still here. The Tiki Room, the Mad Tea Party, Snow White, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, like, you have so much reverence. So it's fascinating to see how Disneyland has to compete and alter itself, but also still kind of stay in the future at the same time.
Yeah.
You see all these other places getting really great attractions, of course, but, you know, China has no problems. They don't care. They're going to rip out whatever they want, you know, and Walt Disney World, in a sense, they can do it and it's not a big deal. You know, obviously still theirs probably would be the most historic second, because obviously it's, you know, 71, and, you know, people were obviously upset about the Great Movie Ride, despite yeah. the fact that Runaway Railway is also really great, you know, mm-hmm. but it's a tough line. I do not, you know, I my heart goes out to Imagineering about how to find that line. I mean, I remember when the Small World dolls, the Disney ones.
Oh, yeah.
People created a petition to have Kim Irvine fired for that.
I know. And she's amazing.
And I was like, and then now nobody could care about it. Yeah. And you could take like your friend on there and he would not know that those were new.
Right.
Because they were built in. But it was just the idea that mm-hmm. Kim Irvine is going to add Disney into that ride that people could not settle with.
Well, yeah. I was one of those people when it came to the castle, when they repainted the castle, the mm-hmm. concept art, I was like, I don't know, this concept art. I don't know if I like these, like, sparkly star things on the roof. Mm-hmm. Like, what the heck is going on? But the first time I walked down Main Street and saw it, I was like, that was exactly the right decision. Yep. It needed to be vivid, because that castle, a lot of people's complaint about the castle is that it's tiny. It pops now.
Yeah.
It pops.
I see a fairy falls over dead every time I hear somebody say that. It's like, this is too small.
Falls over dead.
I was like, listen, Walt did not have a lot of money, okay?
Well,
like,
and what? Yeah, think of how old that castle is. Like,
But my other controversial castle top thing is I think that the one that's in Tokyo and the one that's in Florida are ugly. Like, they are the most ugly Disney castles. Paris is gorgeous. If they were ever going to replace our castle, Paris castle would be great. But I actually kind of like the one in Hong Kong that they've done now. Like, I was a little iffy about that in the beginning, too. But I think that's I've come around on that one. Well, as usual, we had so much great conversation with Philander that we will have another episode, probably two more episodes after this, to finish up our conversation with Philander. So tune in next week for that.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World. D.O. Weekly.
All right, well, welcome back to Trivia Land. We got four stumpers this week, and I'm going to tell you right now, one of you had a really bad time.
One of us.
Only one of us. There's hope that somebody got something right. I didn't think either one of us got anything right, so.
There's some hope. Our first question this week, of the attractions that have a height requirement in the Disneyland Park, which is the shortest? Tag said the Autopia, Teresa guessed Splash Mountain. Tag is on the board. It is there the Autopia. You have to be 32 inches tall as long as you're with an adult. Funny enough, it's also the tallest height requirement in the park. To drive alone, you have to be 54 inches tall.
Wow. I didn't even think there was a height requirement to go with an adult. I thought you could go.
Me too.
I thought you could just go.
All right, moving on. A two-part question. I'm really only interested in the answer for the first one, though. And it was, how much did it cost to build Disneyland? And then how much money is the equivalent of that as of 2020? It cost $17 million to build Disneyland.
Wow.
Tag on the money. Second point of the night.
It's all downhill from here.
According to according to a GDP calculator I found, it's the equivalent of $133 million today.
That's it?
So,
wow. Yeah.
Moving on to our third question, since we were already talking about money. Chrissy A. wanted to know, how much more expensive is it to buy a Monte Cristo and a soft drink today at the Blue Bayou versus the same sandwich and an iced tea in 1970? You both well undershot this one. It is a difference of $35.25. Today on the menu, the Monte Cristo sandwich with a seasonal salad is $29. Ooh. In 1970, your Monte Cristo was $2, and it was a quarter to get an iced tea. And our final question this week was a cast member costume. We've got some plain blue slacks and a hat that reminds me of an updated cap the boys wore in the Newsies. The hat color matches the pants. The shirt is much more exciting with some orange lines, fancy fasteners, along with areas of white, light blue, and more of that matching blue color. You both are wrong. Time to hop on one of your favorite trains in the park. It's the monorail.
I'm going to have to pay closer attention next time. I don't remember there being orange and there was a lot more colors than I remember there being. I'm going to have to pay closer attention.
I had fun asking these questions this week, especially the listener questions. Taking Teresa. I think they had fun this week too, right?
Sure.
Fun.
Yes, that's one word for it.
You can help us continue to stump TNT or maybe be nice and let them get some right. You can send producer Vernon and myself an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
We'll be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.